Why can't I hear anything? Oh, there you are.
Oh, I'm so...
What happened?
Apparently the XLR came loose on the mic.
Oh, whoops.
What I was going
to say...
It's
not one of those wireless XLR mics that you... Yeah.
No, although... well, we'll get into that in a second. Whoever...
Are there wireless XLR mics?
Well, no, not exactly. But I'm looking into wireless mics right now. So it's a... Man, what a rabbit hole. Lav, like good lavs.
Oh, like the little bitty ones?
Yeah. Like, you know, Countrymen and Deity makes some. Yeah, I mean, there's just like little tiny lavs you can plug into like those Rode Go whatevers, you know?
Right. Aren't the Countrymen's, isn't that what they use like on theatrical productions?
Yes, they use like a lot of Countrymen for that because they're really like indestructible. But apparently
those are the ones that kind of come around your cheek.
Well, some of them do. Yes. Yeah. But the real good one to get that everyone talks about is the COS 11D.
COS, like headphone COS, K-O-S-S?
No, C-O-S. It's the Sanken COS 11D. Sanken is the name of the company. Huh. But they cost $400 for a little tiny lav mic, just the microphone.
Oh, wow.
And apparently they're what all the cool kids use.
Oh, well, that knocks me out. I don't need that.
Apparently
obviously.
I'm not a cool kid.
I'm just going to go back to my soup can and twine.
But here's the problem. If I've already got a pair of those wireless go-tos and I want
to... Rodes. Yeah.
And I want to film a scene, those things record internally. They are pretty good wireless back to the little hub thing. If I'd spend either $800 on two of those mics or there's a Deity one that no one has in stock right now for $120, that's pretty good. Spend $300 on a couple mics. Do I need a sound person? You know what I'm saying? Like,
you need Tom in Michigan.
I do need Tom in Michigan, but I don't think he's going to ride all the way out to New York to work on my little stupid thing.
He might. You never know.
You know, I've heard about him traveling further for less, I think.
But, yeah. I mean, it's worth a shot.
It's a tough world out there in the recording industry.
Yeah. Well, so expect a voicemail from
hey guys,
Tom in Michigan.
Love
in
the
three,
episode.
3, 2, 1. There it is. have you learned the Benny Hill theme yet?
No,
that would be great.
You know, I'll work on that. Did you have cinnamon and sugar on your toast? Because I've decided that cinnamon makes toast.
Just butter. Just butter.
Butter, cinnamon, and sugar. Whoever invented that, man, they deserve an award.
Trader Joe's has they don't have it anymore. They had it seasonally. It's vanilla sugar, and it's got little bits of vanilla bean mixed in with the sugar. That's pretty tasty.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you buy it and stock it up in your fridge in the basement?
We had a run of several containers of it, but now it's gone. Ugh. And they had this pistachio butter that was really good too, but now that's gone.
I don't do the Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
It's just far enough away and just complicated enough that I just can't. I don't know.
What was the market I used to go to when I was in New York? Gristiti's.
Sure.
Is it still there?
Yep. Still there.
It's still a thing?
Upper West Side sort of thing.
Yeah. I was 86th between West End and Riverside.
Yep. That would be the Upper West Side.
Yeah.
You were right there. You were sitting there.
I was
there.
In the thick of it.
You were in the thick of it.
I was in the thick of it.
It was you and pretty much all of Sex and the City or something.
Right. Walking by H&H Bagels every morning when that was still a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good times.
Actually, it's pretty sad. There's a bakery, or rather there was a bakery called Caputo Bakery in, not like within walking distance of our house. Like if I wanted to walk for half an hour, I could get there. Mm. And, they closed, this week after 124 years.
Wow.
They've been open for five generations.
Wow.
Five generations.
C-A-P-U-T-O Bakery.
And it's just really weird. They ended with this, right?
Here it is.
Here's a letter.
Closed after 124 years.
It is with immense, this is just stuck to the window. It is with immense sadness that I'm writing to tell you that the flame in our oven has been lit for the last time, and Caputo Bakery has come to its end of its 124-year life. For five generations, my family has taken pride in serving this community And it is with a heavy heart that I've made this difficult decision. We are deeply grateful for the trust you place in us, the stories you shared, the generations that walked through our doors. I will also profoundly grateful to the many dedicated employees who have been part of the Caputo Bakery for over the years. Their hard work and commitment have made this all possible. Please note that last night was our last night of production, and we will not be delivering tomorrow. Thank you for allowing us a part in your lives.
When did this happen?
Heather mentioned it. This happened yesterday, apparently.
And just, oh my gosh.
My question is, like, you've been open for 124 years.
Yeah.
You go out with Ariel as your font?
At least it wasn't Comic Sans.
Actually,
I think Papyrus.
That actually isn't Ariel. That's what's the one, the Calibri? Is that the new stock font in Office when you first open it up?
I don't own a copy of Office. I couldn't tell you.
I haven't either. But
look at this. Caputo's Bake Shop. Okay. it's sad to me that when things like this happen, because I think these kinds of things, these kinds of generational businesses, those are sort of the embers of the American dream.
Okay. I can see that. Yep.
Especially, I mean, Caputo, maybe this is an Italian American. Somebody came over.
Yeah.
Sure. Right.
Yep.
Said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start a bake shop because my father baked bread in Italy or Sicily or wherever they came from. And I'm going to do this. And they become not just businesses, but they become part of community. They become anchors in communities.
Yep.
It transcends just, I bake bread, I make muffins, whatever it is.
And that's a little Italy sort of area right there where it is. Yeah. There's all these little places right there.
I remember getting lost in Little Italy. I was lost and I just happened to be in Little Italy.
Those are two different things. You're like,
yeah. I was trying to get back to the Upper West Side, and this was like 1989, 90.
Okay.
And I was walking through Little Italy and I was just exhausted and just frustrated, and you know, and this guy at a little Italian cafe restaurant, he just said, "Hey, you are you okay?" And I told him, and he's like, "You know what? Come in, have some lunch, and we'll work it out. Everything will be fine." And made me a plate of pasta, and said, "Okay, where do you, you know?" Sat down with me at the table, said, "Where are you trying to go?" Yeah. I told him, "Okay." And he took a little, like not a placemat, but like a little sheet of paper. And he's like, "Okay, here's where you are. Here's where you want to go. Here's what you have to do."
Yeah.
And he drew me this little map, and you know, we got to talking, and you know, they'd been there for decades, and I don't remember the name of the place now. I'm sorry. But, you know, little things like that are important.
Sure.
And what are you going to do? You're going to ask the kid who's working at Starbucks for I think losing that sort of generational type of business affects community, and losing community affects us all.
Yeah. But if, you know, the world is built or is transitioning to something where that's just not viable any longer.
But think about that. I mean, if a bakery, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to break it down,
it's making cookies and bread can't stay in business.
That's the thing, right?
Yeah.
Flour, salt, water, yeast. No, that's not viable in 21st century America.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I was talking to somebody the other day who was they were being asked to use a lot more AI at work and that kind of stuff.
Mm.
And like they were basically pontificating on the fact that their job was being devalued. I was like, "Welcome to my job for the last 20 years."
Yeah,
I know how you feel. I've been dealing with that. By the way, every when you were telling that story, all I could do is picture you at like 4 years old, and you're like a little kid, and he's like, "Have a plate of pasta. All right, here, kid. This is where you need to go."
Kind of the thing, right? And I felt so much better.
Sure.
I mean, it was just, you know, somebody. And,
because
and
it was
again,
a human interaction? What was it?
Yes. I think that's part of it. Yeah. I think that's part of it. You know, Adrian turned me on to a book called Bowling Alone. that I read probably, I don't know, about a year and a half ago. And it is, hold on, let me get the Bowling Alone. Very famous book.
The Collapse apparently. And Revival of American Community.
Yeah.
By Robert Putnam.
Yep. Yeah. And it's sort of a historical, you know, chronicling of the demise of community, whether that's backyard barbecues or bowling leagues or, you know, playing bridge with your friends and neighbors, and how in the wake of that, there's a different kind of person that has emerged. Right. And mm-hmm. a different kind of relationship to the world that has emerged. And I just find it really sad because I think you and I were born around the same generation, let's say. I think, what am I, 8 years older than you? What, how old are you?
51.
You're 51. Yeah. So I'm going to be 59. But I'm, you know, I'm old enough to remember the idea of community and neighborhoods and knowing your neighbors and looking out for one another and going and doing things with your neighbors. And, you know, and my parents were part of, they played cards. They were part of bowling leagues. They, sure. you know, there were avenues for, community and engagement with your friends and neighbors.
Sure.
And it's so strange to not have that now and to not really know what to do about it. You know, it's,
yeah,
that's yeah. It's just very strange.
I mean, I don't, my mother used to play bridge, right, with these like four women or whatever. But I think most of the time they were just drinking wine and kibitzing, you know,
and that's fine. Yeah. That's even that has value. Yep. You know, like we know our neighbors and we, one of our neighbors, organizes a monthly dinner. And we go and in our town, and we go to different mom and pop restaurants on a weeknight when they're probably slower. And, you know, 10, 15, 18, sometimes 20 of us will go visit these restaurants and we'll just sit sort of family style and just talk all the
right.
neighbors.
Right, right, right.
And it's really cool. And I have come to really look forward to it.
Do you not have options for that more spontaneously? I have friends in my neighborhood that I can just, you know, yesterday it was 5:30 and it was a beautiful day outside. And I texted my friend Terrence. I said, "Hey, I'm going to go do a loop in the park. You in?" He's like, "Yep. 10 minutes on the corner," whatever.
Yeah. I'd love that. I don't really have that.
Yeah.
I do that myself by myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And if Adrian has, you know, a break in her schedule, she does a lot of meetings and she does a lot of like time sensitive stuff. So, you know, she often won't have a half hour or 40 minutes, you know, other than taking lunch or something to just go for a walk. Sometimes she does. And when she does, we take advantage of that.
Yeah.
But a lot of times it's, you know, it's me and the dog.
Aww.
I don't want to sound like there's no community because there is. And I think it's just different now, you know?
Yeah. But you know, it's, and I'm not, I agree with you, in general. There are some people who would say, well, yeah, but you know, in the times of bowling leagues and whatever it is, there are a lot of people who felt obligated to go to these things who really weren't up for it, or women were, you know, gender roles and all that nonsense, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's positives and negatives to all of these things. Right. I mean, you and I get emails all the time from people who see you and I talking, or the hundreds of hours of you and I talking, or the, you know, as a sort of virtual community.
It absolutely is.
But there's not as much back and forth in that than as there used to be. Right.
Right. Right. Right. Right. Right.
And you and I have made some good friends through this.
Absolutely.
So, all of that is also there. Things change, man. Like, and it's weird. I'm trying to, this is like deep conversations I go through with my therapist sometimes.
Sure.
It's, you know, I was talking about, like, you know, I don't have a dog. And I love dogs. I don't have a dog partly because I don't want to get up at 6 a.m. in the wintertime to like walk down 4 flights of stairs to have them poop, and have to pick up their poop. But beyond that, it's sort of like this feeling of, man, I know that dog's going to die before I am. And that's going to be so sad that I'd rather just not have the dog, you know?
Yeah. And, yeah. I mean, yeah.
And to me, like, that's my gut reaction to that. You know, this is like,
that's, and it's real. That's a real reaction. Cooper's eight,
yep.
You know, and yep. I know that, you know, he's starting to slow down, yep. And, yep. You know, this, and, that, and the other.
And, you know, the guy I asked to go for the walk yesterday, like, maybe one day he'll move out of town or out of the neighborhood, or I'll, you know, we'll move out of the neighborhood, or who knows, you know, things will change where that's no longer a thing that we do. Yeah. Right. Because life moves on. And I generally automatically see that as loss, when the reality is that it's really just change, you know?
Yeah. But why can't they both be true? Sure. Why can't it also be a loss?
Why can't I have my cake and eat it too? Yes. No, it can be. But it's assuming that nothing will come to replace it, you know, when things do all the time.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be positive. I am not necessarily believing what I'm saying. I'm trying to sell myself on it.
Yeah. I mean,
I can get you in this car today for just 44, you know?
Yeah. Right.
That's what it feels like.
It's definitely change. And I think where it gets more difficult is when you start thinking about that 20 summers or 25 summers or whatever that, sure, you've got, yep, that you've got left, and you go, okay, now yes, I know things are going to change. How do I pivot so that I'm not progressively feeling more and more isolated and alone?
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think that these kind of thoughts keep you from acting, period? Like, not acting, like going on stage, but I mean, is there a sense of it where it's, where you're sort of paralyzed by these sort of,
I don't know that it's a paralysis, but it, you know, I've talked to a bunch of people, and you ask, like, where does a 40 something, 50 something, where do you go to make friends?
Yeah.
I don't drink. Right. So that's out.
Yeah.
You know, where does one go that, yeah, doesn't feel weird? You know, you can go to a cafe, or, you know, bring a laptop and, you know, initiate a conversation with someone there. But are you that weirdo who, like, why are you talking? Like,
well, for a lot of people, it's the work situation, right? Is a way, right? People you're around all the time for, and, well, but that's not true for you and I.
Yeah. And a lot of people I know work remotely, so they don't even, sure, have that social side of work anymore. Like, man, and that was a huge thing.
I,
right,
still think that the implications of work from home is deeper than we think it is.
I think the
negatives,
right,
are worse than people let on.
I tend
only
to believe
see
that.
The positives. Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to, I'm sure there's going to be research.
Sociologists, you know, are writing papers right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Yeah. For me, it would not work. For somebody, yeah, who's an introvert who doesn't want to be around people, I guess it's magical.
Yeah. But then you don't, you know, like, think about how many kids, because of the pandemic, missed, you know, formative years in that social, sure, dynamic.
Yep.
You know, learning those skills, yep, learning how to navigate between peer groups, yep, and you missed all that. So now when you go out in the real world, you're unprepared. You don't know how to deal with it.
I know two people who missed junior and senior year of high school.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That's when you become who you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
You,
yeah,
know, so it's,
yeah, I would make that case. Freshman and senior years are transformative. You're coming, yep, first year in the big pool, and then you're getting ready to leave and to go to a bigger pool.
Yeah.
And those are massively important,
yeah,
years.
And relationships. And maybe it's the first time you have sex, and, you know what I mean? Like, all of that stuff goes along with it too.
Yeah.
It's tough. And it's, you know, all these different sort of stages of life and how you see yourself within we watched, we had some people over the other night. We watched Heathers, the movie.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Christian Slater.
Christian Slater, which, by the, yeah, way, Christian Slater, come on. Like,
yeah, he was great. And for a while, he was the it guy, right?
Yeah.
What was he? Pump Up the Volume?
Yeah.
Where he was the DJ.
I like Pump Up the Volume. It's weird to me that he didn't have a even bigger career after,
same,
all of that stuff.
Same.
Because I think he's a really good
actor.
What
was that little part he had in Mr. Robot? He was good in that.
Ah, yeah. And also in...
Way better than Rami Malek.
The Contender. You know, the movie with Joan the Allen is running for vice president. And
I didn't see that.
Is it good? Watch that. Yeah.
The Contender. Okay.
And Jeff Bridges is the president. He's really good.
Oh, really? I love me some Jeff Bridges.
Oh, then yeah, you need to watch The Contender. In fact, the guy who wrote it for Joan Allen and like bumped.
Oh, really?
Bumped into her one day and said, "Hey, I wrote this. Movie script for you, you know." And apparently the guy said, she looked at him and she goes, "Well, send it to me. Let me take a look."
That's great.
And
that's great.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Did I ever tell you a friend of mine's Redford story?
No.
Can I tell you this quick story? Yep. So it's a friend of mine, Jude Prest, writer, director, actor, producer, one of those multi-hyphenate guys, super talented, has done a ton of documentary work. He was on the second to the last Titan submersible mission before it imploded.
Yikes.
He was in the North Sea doing a documentary about the whole thing. Yeah, no. Anyway, so we were talking when Robert Redford died. I said, "Did you ever meet Redford?" And he's like, "Yeah, actually, I've got a story for you." I said, "Okay." He said, I wrote a script for Redford. I wrote this part for him, and it was probably 90s, maybe early 90s, I think, he said. And I went to Sundance. I was going to give him this script if I ran into him. So I went with the express purpose of running into Robert Redford, giving him the script. And so he's like, I go to Sundance, didn't see him. It was the last day. And he's like, "So I do you remember 411 where you could dial information?"
Yeah.
So he's like, I dial information and I ask for Robert Redford's address. And they gave it to me.
Ballsy.
Yeah. And I was like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "So I go up to the house and I knock on the door. Nothing. A couple minutes later, door opens. There stands Robert Redford." And he's like, "I know this is terribly inappropriate. You know, I've written this script for you, this part. And I think you'd like it. It's terrific. And I wanted to give it to you." And Redford says, "Well, come inside. Let's talk about it." And Redford makes him a cup of tea and they sit there for like 45 minutes talking about this script and movies and acting. And he said, "It was just great. It was just great." And he's like, "So I've taken up enough of your time. I'm going to thank you so much for your time, blah, blah, blah." And he's like, "Tell you what," he's like, "I'll take a look at it. If there's anything in it, I'll get in touch with you." And Jude says, "Great." So he leaves. And like a month later, he gets a letter from Robert Redford. And it's this, he said, "It's this very nice letter." He's like, I really enjoyed your script. I don't think it's the right thing for me, but I just wanted to say thanks for taking the time to bring it by. It was a pleasure meeting you and I wish you the best of luck." Signed, Robert Redford.
I mean, super classy, but could you imagine how many, if everyone did that, the guy wouldn't be able to live his life.
I know. Yeah. So kind of cool though.
No, that's a great story.
You know, I think it speaks to that era of actor, you know, Newman, Pacino, Dustin Hoffman, you know, whatever, Cliff Robertson.
Oh, yeah.
He was another one I put in there.
Yeah. How did I bring that up in the first place? Oh, Heathers. So, but it made me think about when I saw that movie in whatever, 19, what would that have been? 89?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Something like 89, that.
91, yeah. Somewhere in there. Because it was all that same.
Yeah.
Those kinds of movies. There were a lot of them, right?
I used to think, you know, how heavy and deep and important all these things that these kids are thinking and saying are, right? You know, because I was myself 14 or 15 when I see the movie or something, right?
89, by the way.
Oh, there you go. 14. So I'm 14. You're 37. And we're watching them.
There it is.
No, but, and I'm watching it and I'm just thinking, I look at it nowadays. I'm like, oh my God, kids, get over yourselves. Right. Because you're 16 years old. You know nothing, Jon Snow. And of course I'm going to say that. I'm a 51-year-old man now. I'm not a 14-year-old teenager. Right. But there are these, taking the ride of life from a 14-year-old kid to a 51-year-old teen or 14-year-old teenager to a 51-year-old man to a 78-year-old man, hopefully, that you and I will be someday. I don't know, accepting the world for how it is and where you are on the ride is a really difficult thing for me. Like
in what way?
I don't know. I kind of wish I could start all over again at 25. But then again, I hated being 25, so I don't really want to be back there. But I want the feeling that I had when I was back there, that sort of that buzz of energy, that sort of
possibility.
Yes. It's not. See, some people think they're invulnerable when they're younger. I never felt invulnerable. You know, like people think that they're like they're impervious to damage and pain. Like I never felt that way. I was always fairly risk averse, but there was this feeling of, oh, wow, anything could happen and anything. And now here I am halfway, more than halfway through my life. And I know what half of my life is going to look like. I've lived it, you know?
Yeah.
And if I just follow that ballistic curve that went up and follow it back down, I can sort of see the end of my life at the end. I can see where the cannonball is going to land.
Right.
And that takes away some of the excitement. Sorry, cut you off.
No, that's what I was going to ask. Does it take away some of the enthusiasm or does it take away how much you look forward to the next 15, 20, 25, 30, whatever it is?
You know, it does two things. It increases my anxiety. I have less anxiety of whether or not I'm going to have enough money and food to live the rest of my life. Like, okay, we're in that zone where that's no longer a concern, you know, unless the world ends, that's no longer a concern. But it increases my anxiety because my biggest fears are regret sort of fears. Like, oh, I didn't do that thing or I didn't do enough or I, but
there's so much that's outside of your control.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it didn't feel that way when you were younger, right?
Right. Yeah.
Like you felt more omnipotent when you were younger. Like, oh man, if I just do this, the world will bend to my will.
Yeah. Yeah. It often felt like there was a roadmap to anything.
Yes. Yes. You just have to choose which way you want to go and just follow the instructions and you'll get there. And maybe that's somewhat true when you're younger, you're at the beginning of your career, you're all right starting at the bottom. So what, like at 51 years old, I'm not going to start a new career and start at the bottom. I'm not going to go become a nurse and then at 58 years old, start my rotations as a person who's like changing sheets that somebody just wet, you know, like, why would I do that?
And you know, the whole idea of ageism and aging out of entry-level positions
is real.
Yeah. So, sure. I mean, who's going to hire a 54-year-old intern?
Exactly. And if somebody says, oh, you need to go get a job. And I was like, go get a job. I have nothing on my resume other than owning my own business for 25. I haven't had a job in this century.
Yeah.
No one's going to hire me for a job.
Yeah, and that's a real thing. I think, I know because I've spoken to people about it, that it's a real wall that you come up against where you go, I've done this thing. You know, do you remember the guy that the little documentary that we talked about it,
Hero,
like 27 years ago, the soda water guy in New York.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, that delivered the bottles and all of that. Like that's all that guy's ever done.
Yep.
And it was a dying industry from the beginning. It was a dying industry when he took it over.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. And he wrote it into the ground, baby.
Yeah. I mean, but if that's the thing, right? If that's the thing, or going back to the top of the show, the bakery, you know, if there are some younger people working at Caputo's bakery
who are going to go start their own bakery because, you know, that could happen.
It could happen. Or if there's somebody who's been baking bread for 35 years and now they go, well, now what do I do? There are other bakery is it? You know, I'm part of something that was generational. I'm not part of this sort of pop-up, you know, bakery doing, you know, pistachio and urchin muffins or something.
Yeah. Somebody was, there's a John Stewart interview.
Daily Show John Stewart?
Yeah. Did a long form interview with these two economists from MIT talking about like the changes that are coming to the economy because of all the new technology and stuff.
Right.
And these people, they're like, we're not technologists. We're economists. One of them has a Nobel Prize in in economics. So these are not, you know, nobodies. And it was a fantastic conversation. I'll find it and put it in the show notes. It's like an hour and 15 minutes long, and the three of them are cooking the whole time. I found it fascinating. I've watched it twice.
Can you top level it? Like, what were some of the big takeaways?
Well, yeah, sure. Basically, they were saying that, you know, historically, these things are not all doom and gloom, right? Like, there's good things and there's bad things, right? Like, you know, when weaving machines came up, weavers suddenly made 60%, 80% less than they were making before because they were no longer experts, you know, because the machines took over. But that one of the interesting things they said was that in general, things happen generationally. Like, one of the things they pointed out was if we have trucks that drive themselves, right? So we no longer need long haul truckers. There are 3 million long haul truckers in the country. That will take care of itself because it's not like we're going to snap and 3 million trucks are going to be off the roads. It's going to take 10, 15, 20 years for the new trucks to come in, the old ones to go out, the new people you know what I'm saying? Like,
so that they will age out naturally.
They will age out naturally and people won't take the new jobs. And so that'll solve itself. But somebody like a call center, if that gets replaced tomorrow and that has 3 million people in America work at call centers and you snap your fingers and that's all gone because it's all automated and AI people talking to you, like that people switching job, like entire careers in the middle of their lives does not happen very often and does not happen en masse. So right. So the call center thing is much scarier than the long haul trucker thing because there's sort of like a built-in transition period because of the capital expenditure and stuff. But the thing that I found interesting was the idea that like people don't just change their entire lives. I mean, it's weird because, you know, you and I, I'll speak for myself. You can speak for yourself. I have changed my thing a number of times, right? All while I was younger, notably like in my 20s, but I was pretty serious in music. I was pretty serious in the internet stuff. And then I was pretty serious into photography. Like those are all theoretically things that three different people would have done. And I did them all, but I don't know. I worry about maintaining interest in the things that I do as I get older, you know?
Is it a maintaining interest from the perspective of still being interested in doing the work, or is it maintaining interest because other people are doing the work faster, cheaper, arguably better, maybe not on any of those cases? Where does it come from?
I think both of those things. I mean, there's the, you know, there's the up and comers doing it for less, faster, cheaper, whatever.
Yeah, like, sure.
I'm not going to compete with that. Yeah. But then there's also, you know, I borrowed my friend's Leica last time we talked, right? And part of the reason why I borrowed it is because for them, it's a way to like bring joy back to photography, even though they're a professional photographer.
Right.
It's a way for them to sort of, this is not my normal camera. This is the camera that I shoot for fun, not for work.
So it's not about results. It's about the experience is what
I'm hearing. Yes. Yeah. I think it's about the results, but the experience of taking the pictures, has more to do with it. And they find it very refreshing to do. So I borrow this camera. I take it out for a couple of days and I shoot and it's fun. And it's not like I don't know how to use a rangefinder. I've got my M4. Like I've shot Leicas before. And it's neat. It's fun. Did it bring me joy? No. In fact, I brought it back to them like the next day. And they're like, you can have it for a few more days. Like, I don't need it. And I was like, no, like I'm done.
I've seen all I need to see.
In my head, actually, I will say it's like, it made me sad to have it here. It made me sad to have it here because it didn't bring me joy. Like it was this thing that was supposed to make me happy and it didn't.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I don't want to look at the thing that was supposed to make me happy that isn't making me happy. And I know like no thing is going to make you happy. I don't mean not the object, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like the tool to do what I was doing is what I mean. I'm not saying that you need to have a $5,000 camera in order to be happy.
Do you go through or did you go through a period of like, well, this friend of mine loves this thing and it brings them joy. Other people use the same thing. It brings them joy, but it's not bringing me joy. What the hell's wrong with me?
Oh, all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole time I was using it.
Like, why am I not seeing or feeling what these other people see and feel who insisted that I would see and feel the same thing.
Well, and it may be the yeah, right. But then the question becomes, maybe the thing that he and I are suffering from is not the same thing. My problem is not the same problem as his, because his solution does not fix my problem.
Yeah. Do you think we get caught? Oh, that's interesting. His solution does not fix my problem. Yeah, that's really interesting, because we do that sort of comparison thing all the time.
Well, it's the best we have, right? I can't try every single solution to my problem. Who else has this problem? Oh, well, that's what they did. Okay. You know, they got bigger tires for the truck, and that let right. them go over the road or whatever it is. It's like, okay, I'll try bigger tires. I'm still getting stuck. All right. Maybe it's not the tires, you know?
I find a lot of comfort in hearing you talk about that. Because I think I have felt the same way for a long time, that the things that, you know, I watch other people paint, I watch other people, you know, doing visual work, and they just seem, and maybe this is the key, they seem a lot happier than I am. And I don't think that it's, let me be very clear. I don't think I'm unhappy per se, but I'm definitely not happy with sure. what I'm doing. It's not bringing me joy, and I'm finding that I'm going through some of the same processes again and again, because I can get a halfway decent result.
Right.
And I don't know what else to do.
Yeah. And if you try something else, it's generally not successful, and then you get frustrated and go backwards.
Right.
You go back to home base.
You go back and go, well, you know what? I'll go back and do this thing I'll stick to these colors because I know they look good together, and I'll stick with this kind of composition because I know that kind of composition kind of works. And, you know, but it denies the ability or not the ability. It denies transformation, right? It sure. denies change. It denies growth. Because you're still trying to make the thing that you know, you're trying to turn the thing that you know into the thing that you want.
Can you force change like that? Can you say, I'm going to change, or does it
successfully in my experience so far?
Yeah. Does it? Sometimes I feel like the times that change has happened and been successful for me, whatever successful means, like that it felt right, or I came onto something new, or I grew, was not a time that I sat down and said, I am going to change and improve myself and better. Like,
yeah. Okay. From that perspective, I 100% agree with you.
But maybe
I wasn't prepared, nor did I architect the massive, what I would call the massive changes career-wise that sure. have happened in my life.
Right.
They all, excuse me, they all came.
They discovered you. You didn't discover them.
Yes. Now, what I will say is there was a willingness to be changed. There was a willingness to be uncomfortable. There was a willingness to try something new that I didn't necessarily know how it was going to turn out. And I read something the other day, and it was talking about how the older you get, how time appears to speed up the older we
sure.
get.
Yep.
And they were saying that it is one of the reasons for that is patterns,
yep.
repetitive patterns, don't encourage neuroplasticity.
Yep.
So your brain isn't working as hard to figure out new things. So it's coasting along, and time seems to go fast because there's nothing new to slow it down.
So taking different routes on your travels, doing things in a different way, in a different order, those are all good things for that.
Yeah. Yep. And it was fascinating. Now, I don't know.
Do you think you no longer have that plasticity?
Boy, I don't know.
Like you're obviously looking for something new. Something new came along, is it the old adage of, like, you know, there's a knock at the door, and it's like, go away, I'm waiting for somebody to show up, or whatever the joke is. You know what I'm talking about?
Right. I don't know. You know, I mentioned some of this to my friend Michelle the other day, and she said, you need to try new experiences. And she sent me a residency, information about a residency, an artistic residency in Iceland, in like the northwest, you know, not corner, but one of the northwest towns on the coast of Iceland.
Jeffrey, that's a hospital. That's not a...
Yeah, right. Don't worry if the coat doesn't fit. The sleeves are meant to be a little long. It's fine. Just give yourself a hug. Let's see what that's like. And I thought, my first response was, there's no effing way I'm going to Iceland. You know, it's cold in Iceland. Right. And then...
Why not?
Well, that was the thing. And then I thought, well, you know, maybe that's just the kind of, you know,
kicking the pants
shakeup. What was the thing that Minnie Driver said to, Matt Damon in Goodwill Hunting? It was Minnie Driver and John Cusack in Gross Point Blank. The shakabuku or whatever, like the jarring of the soul or something.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what, as we get older, maybe we need one of those.
You've been in the woods too long.
Yeah. Maybe we need one of those to kind of like, you know, blow the cobwebs off.
Is there a fear for you of being put in a situation like that and not being able to perform? That sounds like an impotency joke, but I don't mean that. I honestly just mean, you know, like where, all right, Jeffrey, here you are in this new thing, whatever it is, we're going to work on this thing together, whatever. And just like, you just fall flat on your face. And just like, I should just stay at my damn house.
Yeah. You're here for a month. Go produce a new body of work. Yep. And you're like, well, about what? You know, that's the whole, like, let the world inspire you.
Yes. Well,
but the world doesn't inspire me at the moment.
Right.
There are glimpses. Adrian calls them glimmers. There are glimmers now and again.
Sure.
But they're certainly not consistent, nor are they in my life easily repeatable.
Right. Yeah. And it's sort of like an idea that you have as you're falling asleep that you really should write down because the next morning you're never going to remember it.
Happens all the time.
Yeah.
And I have an electronic e-ink tablet next to me. I keep a paper tablet next to me. I keep my phone that the action button on the side is mapped to voice memos. So there's no excuse.
And you just don't use them or?
I just don't use them.
Why not?
I mean, if I'm asleep, I'm asleep. And
you fool. You
know, I know, idiot. I do often, you know, send myself or not send myself, but record voice memos.
Sure.
If I don't, you know, like having that action button is kind of cool. You hold it down, it pops up the little thing and you say your piece. Now, I would love to have.
You say your piece like you're in a confession or something.
Yeah, right. Well, feels like that more often than you'd think. You know, maybe there's you know, something that also transcribes it because then I have to go back and listen to it and transcribe it by hand. So maybe there's a, you know, some sort of like Whisperflow app or sure. I'm sure there are transcription audio
absolutely.
Apps now.
Yep.
That maybe that would be, you know, the thing to do. But yeah, to answer your question, I don't know. I mean, I feel both uncertain and paralyzed by that uncertainty.
Sure. I also, you know, I think you and I said this on the phone a while back, but it's like, I don't trust happiness anymore. I'm suspicious of it.
Yeah. Well, that was that Billy Bob Thornton thing when he was talking about his brother dying.
Yeah.
You know, it just, it threw him for a loop that he not only says he will never recover from, but doesn't want to recover from it.
Yeah.
Wants to carry that, wants to remember and carry that.
I, you know, it's George Bernard Shaw, you know, it's like if you can't get the skeletons out of the closet, at least you can make them dance.
Like, I don't know that. That's funny.
it's the idea that like you're never going to get over traumas or things in your life, but you can't let them define you. You have to find ways to use those experiences to go on to the next thing, you know, to carry on.
And I think for me, that's the trick, is not seeing them as isolated instances of trauma, but seeing them as bridges or, do you ever watch Shrinking?
Sure. Love Shrinking.
Okay. Did you watch the last episode with the speech that Harrison gave about the scars?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God. I was in tears. Yeah. I was just sobbing.
It's that show's really good.
It is.
I'm almost suspicious of people who don't like that show, or maybe, you know, it's like, you don't like the Beatles, but you know, it's another example of, it's similar to Ted Lasso, where it's just like, it's kind of, the basic theme is that you can get over things and you can become a better person and you can be better with other people and the world can be a better place. It's like, there's an optimistic view to
oh God, it. Yeah.
And, yeah. And I just, it's like, man, I've been sitting in so many, this stew of so many things for all of my life. And it's just, I'm so frustrated by it lately. And I've had conversations with people that I don't know that they're right, but I also don't know that they're wrong. But the answers and things that they're telling me make me uncomfortable.
Mm.
And that kind of makes me think that I'm on the right track.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like that if their answer makes me want to slam the door, then their answer probably has something that I'm really scared of, and that's something I should look at.
Well, yeah. I mean, when I started going to therapy, Sean was saying, you know, he told me, he said, now it's going to get uncomfortable.
Yep.
And you're going to want to quit. Don't quit. Yep. Because if it's uncomfortable, you're uncovering something. You're dealing with something. You're processing something. If it's easy, you're just having a conversation. You're just, you know, when it gets difficult, that's when the real work begins.
Sure.
And don't give up. And he was, in speaking for myself, he was absolutely right. You know, it has been difficult. And to go back to, you know, the Billy Bob Thornton thing about, you know, I don't think I'll ever be fully healed from all the trauma that I've experienced in my life. Right. Not just my parents, but, you know, other things that have happened. I don't think I'll be fully healed, but the goal is to figure out better tools with which to deal with those emotions and those behaviors and the things that come up.
Yeah.
And then again, to go back to that final episode of Shrinking, you know, like, you know, being covered in scars, in emotional or otherwise, is evidence of a life lived.
Yep.
And I find it hard to see it that way when you're in the thick of it.
Well, it's like the tortoise or the manatee with the scars. You know what I mean? Like it's like, yeah, well, what do you think, you're just going to stay sitting there and you're going to be young forever? It's, you know, it's like all these tech jerks trying to live forever and stuff. It's like, no, dude, you're going to die. It's called entropy. Like, you can't.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. Yeah.
It's moonstruck, man.
Yeah.
Cosmo, I just want you to know you're going to die.
Yeah. And you can't take it with you, and you can't, you know, so, you know, it's like I have a thing on the wall right in front of me. You know, you're only here once and you only get one roll of film.
Right. Wow.
You know, and you can choose not to shoot it, but you're just wasting it. But you also can't shoot it too fast, because then you run out of film before you end. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a real, like, you got to be choosy about the things that you choose to take pictures of, you know, to put a point on it for this podcast. But it's complicated. All of it's really complicated.
I think you have a,
here it comes.
No.
I think you have a problem, Bill.
No. You have an edge on me in that you've had the experience of being with a therapist for a longer period than I have. Is it, I mean, I've been in therapy for about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And I think there has been progress made. Do you recognize the plateaus?
Yes.
Where it feels like you do. Where it feels like nothing's changing, or it's not changing fast enough.
Yep.
Okay.
To me, a lot of times that's when I want to quit.
Really? Not when it's difficult, but when it's samey.
Yeah. It's just like, well, what are we doing here? You know, I mean, I'm happy to tell them about what was happening this week, but I always want to, it's interesting. This is a conversation we have all the time because, you know, I know people, I have friends who I want to talk about things all the time. Mm-hmm. I want to, you know, get that wound, scrub it out, you know, figure out what's going on, take apart the clock. Like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
I want to figure out how it works. I want to figure out how to fix it. There are a lot of people that do not want to do that. They don't want to look at it. You know, they may have stuff going on, but they're not ready to open up about it. They're not ready to look at it straight on. And I know that there are probably people in my life for whom that makes them uncomfortable. Part of the reason I think I like to do that both about myself and other people is that, and this is partly how I end up connecting with people, you know, is by going deep really quickly.
Yeah.
For better or for worse. But part of it for me is that I want to talk about the heavy stuff in your life because I figure it's more information that might open up something in my own brain about my life.
Yeah, sure. Yes. Yes.
It's like I've hit a wall thinking about my problem. Let's talk about your problem for a while. Oh, I see. Oh, actually, that's similar to this thing that I'm thinking about. Like, all that's going in my head. I never
thought about dealing with it this way or that way. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, I think that if I have a blind spot, it's that I assume that everyone else wants to figure this stuff out too. And I think that there's a lot of people who do not, or are scared to, or, you know, however you want to put that.
There was a one of the sessions, the topic of medication came up, and I was very instantly no. I do not want to numb myself. I want to figure this out. I want to figure out, you know, you don't get a headache because your body's got an aspirin shortage.
Right.
You know, what else is going on here?
Yep.
You know, so I want to understand. I'm not great at it sometimes. In fact, I'm kind of shit at it a lot of times.
Right.
But I want to understand what made me snap like this, or what made me respond that way, or what made me cry at the, whatever it is, often, I want to understand.
But you know, it could be, the problem is that it could be that you snap at the guy at the store, but really it goes back to something that happened to you when you were four, you know,
and that's hard to wrap my head around. Frankly.
Exactly. The reason why we react to things and why our unconscious, if you want to get into old school psychotherapy, that our unconscious is doing all kinds of things and has all kinds of plans and reactions and things that we do not control, and trying to weed those things out. It may, it's like, oh, I got in a fight with Bill today about whatever, may have had nothing to do with me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It could have had something to do with something completely different. Could have had something to do with something that actually was a happy thing from your past, but just I triggered something, or, you know what I mean? Whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
And I think I don't disagree with you. I mean, I haven't been in many, 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 many years. Actually, last year, 2 years ago, I tried taking Lexapro for a week.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time in 20 years, because I was having a really crazy, I was just crying every day. I was having a really hard time. Mm. And then, you know, a day and 12 hours after taking the first pill, I went, oh, right. I remember how this feels. And I go, yeah, this isn't for me, but I have other friends for whom it changes their whole world. Yeah.
Back up for a sec. When you take something like that, whether it's, what's it called? Lexapro? Whether it's Lexapro or something else.
Sure.
Are you, because I've never taken anything like that. Are you removed? Do you feel removed from yourself in a way that, man, I don't know how I'm trying to say this. Are you still aware of yourself and the behavior, or does it sand enough of the edges away where you just feel almost numb?
For me, it removes one of the inputs.
What do you mean?
So for me, like I don't think I am manic depressive, but I definitely have sort of like racing thoughts kind of stuff. And then I get
sure,
sad.
Same. Yeah. Same. Yeah.
It sort of takes that. So it's, I no longer get the sadness coming in from the side, but I also don't get the manic coming in from the side. I'm just sort of in the middle. And okay. I don't like that because I'm willing to deal with the depression in order to have the moments of speed. Like, I don't want to lose the speed. Like, that's the only part that I actually look forward to. I don't want to be normal. I want to be fast. And I don't, you know, and I don't do any other drugs or anything like that. Barely do caffeine, you know? So yeah. It's not like, in fact, part of the reason probably I should never do drugs is because I think I would really like something that sped me up.
Right.
But, so for me, it's I know who I am, but I don't feel like myself because so much of me is that sort of is that sine wave input coming from the side. It's like a synthesizer where it's like it's like a side chain input that you don't have turned on.
Yeah, yeah. See, and this is honestly one of the things that I have been so reluctant about is I want to lessen the number of. You know, not maybe not number, lessen the severity of
those sort of chaos.
Yeah,
sure.
But not at the cost of not experiencing them at all.
Well, I mean, the good thing about it is that, you know, you can tune these things. There are a bunch of them. You can try them. And if you don't like it, get off them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I certainly think it's worth trying. I have friends for whom it has changed their lives.
Really?
Yep. So, I mean, it's, you know, I'm not one who's just like, there is no value to these medications. I'm not one of those people at all. Just right. For me, and I've been on Paxil, Prozac, Zoloft, Lexapro, Celexa, Wellbutrin, Effexor at different times.
Wow.
I tried them all back in the day.
You could like walk around with a trench coat and make a fortune.
Yeah. I mean, I tried them all back in the day and they're not for me, but for some people they really are, you know.
Was there any singular one that got close that you were just like, well, if this would just a little bit this way or that way,
that's
I could
problem.
Work with that.
The first time I took any of them, I took Zoloft and I had what I know.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. This was in college in 94. So early on in the days of SSRIs. And I had what I can only describe as like the best week of my life, but
oh, really?
I now perceive as sort of a negative manic kind of week.
But you didn't perceive it that way in the moment.
In the moment, time. I wrote a string quartet. Yeah,
oh,
it was awesome.
Wow.
But you can't. Stay there all the time. Those things are, they're really interesting because they are an interesting, to me, they're a crutch. I used to liken it to, when you have depression, I'm going to use depression as the thing. And you feel like you are literally inside of a cloud of sadness, right?
Yeah.
And then you can take those medications and suddenly you see that what's been happening is that there's this cloud and there's been people whacking at you with 2x4s, but you never get to see it because it's all inside of a cloud, right? You just feel the pain of the 2x4s hitting you. Mm-hmm. And you take the stuff and the cloud dissipates and now you can see the 2x4s for what they are. And you think in your head, oh, I see where the 2x4s are. So now I can go off the drugs and get the advantage of the ups and downs and still know where the things are going to be walloping me. But instantly you just stop taking the drugs and the cloud comes back and you can't see the 2x4s hitting you anymore.
They're coming from a different position
now.
Exactly. So you're not. Okay.
Yeah. So it's this thing where you think that you get it figured out when you're on them. And then, so it's like, okay, I don't like being on them, but I can understand my mental proprioception, as it were.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you go off of them and you realize that like, no, the balance was because of the drugs. Like it wasn't because you understood something better. I like that mental proprioception.
Yeah. Interesting.
I mean, listen, I am not going to tell you to take them or not take them, but I would say that if you want to try them, don't be scared of them. It's not like going on something. It's not like, you know, taking Oxy and worrying about getting addicted to them, you know?
Yeah. I have this perception.
Do you see it as a crutch?
Never having taken anything like that, I don't know. I just have this perception of like this weird, you know, do I want to put myself in control of the, or do I want to allow myself to be controlled by this weird psychoactive drug that I don't really understand what it does?
Yeah. I mean, it's not quite like that in my experience. I think you're still you, but it does. It's that side chain. That's a good, it's like, I came up with that a minute ago, and I think that's a pretty good way of saying it. You lose that other thing that modulates you, but for better or for worse.
But can you control the volume, for lack of a better word, of that side chain, or like the level?
I mean, different meds do different things. There are dosages of them. The one thing I will say, and I've been on some of them for a relatively long time and some of them for not a long time. They say, oh, it takes 3 weeks for you to feel anything. BS, as far as I'm concerned.
Really?
Hours after I take that stuff, I feel different. And then I stop taking it.
Do you
and it's
lose
gone.
Yourself, or do you go, like, I guess this is what I don't understand. It's a fear of the unknown. It's the fear of, am I still going to recognize me as me, or am I going to, like, you know?
Well, I mean, you used to drink, right? You have drank, you have smoked weed, you have done those things. Did you feel like you didn't feel like yourself when you were on those things?
No.
Okay. Well, then this
You know, I don't do any of that stuff now.
Yeah. But I'm just saying that, like, I think that it's probably even, it's different than that, but I don't think it's as heavy as those things, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it can be really subtle for a lot of people, you know? I just noticed for me, it took away the stuff that I liked as well as the stuff I didn't like.
And that, again, that is one of the fears. Yep. I don't want to, I'm concerned that it's going to take away the things that I actually do like about me.
Sure.
Of which there are few.
Yep. Oh, that goes for the rest of us. Not, I mean, wait, what?
What? Test 1-2. Test 1-2.
Oh, the mic, the XLR is out again. yeah, but you know
you
what?
Prick.
You can stop, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, for me, I really notice it instantly. It's a personal choice. A lot of things are personal choices.
I'm tired of it being so difficult all the time.
Yeah. I mean, there are also, we're only talking to thousands of people, so I can tell you that there are also side effects, you know?
Yeah.
You know, for some people, they eat too much, you know, they gain a little weight.
See, that it's all those.
For other people, there's sexual connotations to all of it.
It just sometimes feels like medicine is, you know, you listen to some of these commercials and they're like, yeah, it'll cure your watery eyes. But, there's a risk of paralysis and death and you may develop a tumor on the back of your head. And like all of these like weird things. And you go, do we really know what we're doing? Is medicine just sort of happenstance?
I think that it is.
We developed this for this. It doesn't work for that, but it works for this thing over here.
Yep. I think that is totally true. But I don't know what the alternative to that is, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that we, I don't know, man. Like, I think that the one thing I will say is that it's not like in the 20 years or 15 years that I've known you, not trying it has not made it better.
Yeah.
And
fair point.
You know, if something can, even if it just sort of knocks you in a different direction, there's value in that.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm a strong believer. My new thing right now for me is that I'm trying to fill all of my time. So, yeah. I still need some money for my movie, but next Tuesday I'm planning on shooting a scene of my movie, to use as a tool to show people to maybe get a little bit more,
notice. Sizzle
reel. Yeah. Like, shoot a scene so I can show people like, this is the vibe of the film.
Can you do it without saying the word vibe?
Sure. But you get what I mean.
You're a 22-year-old influencer from,
it's that sort of situation. I'm low key something or other.
They even call it vibe coding now when you're working with AI, I heard that the other day. I'm like, what the hell is vibe coding? Actually, I looked it up.
The one thing I will say though, you're going to like this is a slight change of topic.
Yeah.
Wait, let's see. Wait.
Oh, wait. What is that?
What did you buy?
What have you done?
That's a Canon 6D.
Oh, you bought one or did you borrow one?
I bought one.
We were talking about this. Oh, okay. Look at that. All right.
Sounds good though, doesn't it?
And are you, because, okay, so Bill and I were talking about, Bill,
take
right?
Take the lens off. There we go.
It is Bill, right?
Yeah. Who?
We were talking about picking up a couple of used 5Ds and you said, no, the 6D is the way to go because, and I don't remember why you said that it was the way to go. I sort of tuned out after that, but I know there was more there.
the 6D is the way to go. 5Ds are cool. Do you watch that guy on Instagram? He's just like, new music's cool, but have you ever listened to old music? This is Old Music Friday. You ever know this guy?
No.
And he's like, have you ever heard, and a lot of times they're songs you've never heard of, like just some random like R&B tune from the 60s or whatever. But
that's
then
funny.
A couple weeks ago, he's just like, have you ever listened to Midnight Train to Georgia by Glass Knight and the Pips?
No, don't know it. Could you hum it a little?
And he starts playing it and he like dances to it and he stops and he's like, shut up. Shit, you can't do that. He's like, listen to the Pips. Listen to the, he's great.
That's funny. Send it to me,
please. Oh, yeah. Here, let me.
It was something to do with maybe, was it resolution? Because the 5D was only 12
megapixels. I have an answer to that. I just got stuck on the other
one. I don't remember what it was. Talk about a lot of stuff.
The 5D is 12 megapixels. It is sort of a very special camera. It was like the first full frame Canon, one of the first full frame, prosumer cameras you could buy. So you can actually shoot what was like film, but just digitally, with a full frame sensor. It's 12 megapixels. It's great. The problem with it is that it does not, it has compact flash cards.
Oh, that's right. And the 6D uses the SD cards.
And the 5D Mark II also has compact flash cards. The 5D III goes to SD cards, has two slots. The 6D is 20 megapixels, one card slot, and a little bit cheaper.
And cheaper than the 5D III?
Yeah, this camera cost me $310.
Oh, wow.
For the body.
Good condition, though, too, I bet.
It's in good condition, although...
You broke the battery door.
No. I haven't broken anything on it. It's actually just sitting here perfectly. The problems I have with it, one I think actually has something to do with it. One of them has nothing to do with it. I have three Canon lenses that I still own.
Mm-hmm.
I own a 51.8, I own a 51.4, and I own a 28.1.8.
And does Canon still use the same mount that they did back then?
Well, no, or they've
have
switched
they gone
to
the Nikon route.
No, they've switched to the RF mount. Not the EF mount. Okay. You can get an adapter for EF to RF because it's like the depth of the flange is the big difference. So I could like use these lenses theoretically on an RF camera, like an R5 or something. Just got to get the like $100 adapter. That's fine. But so my 28.1.8 and my 50.1.8 are currently on loan to a young friend of mine who has my EOS 7, which is a film Canon camera, because I wasn't using them. And so I let them borrow them. So all I had here was this 50.1.8 and it's a little crunchy and it front focuses a little bit. Like it needs to be fixed.
And you don't have any control over that in the camera to adjust?
You can adjust, but you know, I don't know if you've ever tried to adjust the focus on lenses in these cameras. It's a pain in the ass. It works at different distances for different things. It's a real
Yeah, it's not just a set it and forget it. There's a weird sort of like logarithmic thing that
it's complicated. Yeah. And it works, but it's not as good as just having a lens that's correct. So the one lens that I have to work with it on it is off, I think, a little bit, and I've set an offset, and it works some of the time if I stop down, but it's also not super wide or sharp wide open. I think the lens is just kind of janky. So I need to get the other two lenses back from my friend to try them on it. So that's, I think, that's a me problem. The them problem is that the screen on it, for some reason, this one, and I don't know if it's all of them or just this one, when I take a picture, feels really warm to me. Like the
screen is warm?
Yeah, like not temperature warm, or like white balance warm. It looks like it has a warming filter on it when I just look back on the pictures on the back of the camera. But when I load the raw files into a camera, not for color temperature like that, no, that I can see. So I think maybe like this one, just like the screen is busted or something.
The hot rod firmware back in the day, Magic Lantern.
Yeah, back for the 5Ds. I don't know if they make one for the 6D. I mean, I would not. The part of the reason I wanted this camera is to not have to deal with any of that stuff.
Right.
You know. Right. So what I
and that, effectively the, just digital film is what you're looking for.
Yeah, what I want it for. I will say that I think what I'm going to end up is somewhere between this and the Leica. Which is to say, buying an R5 used.
Yeah.
Which is, you know.
What do they run? Couple thousand dollars?
$2,000 for a good one. Yeah. But I could get an adapter. I can use my lenses if I want to get some RF glass. Like if I want to get an 85-1.2 or 1.8 so I can use it for stupid corporate headshots. Because the thing about the R5 is that, you know, I was talking to my friend Matt the other day because he has one. He was taking pictures of a guy. He's like, I have the camera over my head, like at the end of my arms. You know what I mean? Like my arms all the way up, hand holding it with like the screen tilted down, and I couldn't get it to not focus on his eye.
Oh, wow.
Like they're just so good at focusing that they're kind of stupid that way. And so part of me just kind of wants that. Also, the flanged, because they're mirrorless, which I'm not a huge fan of, but whatever. The EVF on those is actually pretty good. If you want an EVF, that's a pretty good one. But the flange distance is such that you can actually adapt Leica M glass to it, and I could use it manually with Leica M glass.
So kind of best of both worlds.
That's what I'm thinking.
Wow. So, can you rent one can you borrow one from Matt?
I'm sure I could borrow his, but you know, my friend Claudia has one and I was just texting with her the other day. I was like, you still like your R5? She's like, yeah, I just bought a second one.
Oh,
she's like, it's just, I mean, it's sort of like if you want an all purpose master of every, you know, nearly master of everything camera.
How big are they relative to like the 5Ds? Because the 5Ds were chunky boys, right?
A little bit smaller than the 5D front to back.
Yeah.
They're a little thinner. I mean, they're a little tighter, more compact, but around that size.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, and it shoots 8K video.
Like, oh, wow.
You know, so I mean, it's sort
so you're
of
ready for YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, guys, smash that like button. Like and subscribe. Make sure you hit the bell. Really helps the channel.
Yeah. Right.
In the algorithm.
Really helps the algorithm in the channel.
Anyway, I was looking at that. So I was thinking, okay, send this back for $3,000. I don't know, spend $2,000 on that camera. And that's also like a really great just backup camera. So I did a shoot last week. Sorry, I'm monopolizing this conversation.
That's all right. Go ahead.
I did this shoot last week for a magazine. I just shoot this guy. And by the way, I walk into his office and he works for an organization that does auctions to raise money for something. I don't want to get too into it right now, but they get donated a bunch of art that they sell at auctions and then give that money away to research.
Wow. That's great.
But when things don't sell at a certain auction, they hold on to them for the next auction.
Okay.
You know, when they don't get to a high enough price or whatever. So in his office, he had a Rauschenberg and a Warhol sitting against the wall.
No. No.
Anyway, the point of this story was that I brought three of my little Godox lights. I had an assistant, blah, 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 blah. You know, a couple of soft lighters, my usual lighting setup. And I had with me my Pentax, but I just as like a backup, I brought the Fuji with a zoom lens. And the Fuji was my backup. And I used the Pentax the whole time. And you know what? I came home and 97% of those pictures are dead on in focus.
On the Pentax?
Yep. Where...
So you're going to sell your Fuji?
I mean, I hate that Fuji. I just... mostly, it's just like, I don't know what to replace it with. You know? Like if Canon. I had a... Yeah, it could
R5.
Be... It could be the Canon R5. Or, you know, if in some dream world, I say, F it, and I buy a X2D2... 100. Oh,
the Hasselblad?
Yeah. But the glass, man, they're like $4,000 for each lens.
Is it really?
Yeah, because the shutter's in the lens.
Oh, right.
Which also means you can control shutter, you know, you're not stuck at 125th of a second.
Right. So you've got built-in high-speed sync.
Oh, my God. I could like
a leaf shutter.
Yeah. Like you could do all that crazy Annie Leibovitz stuff where you're like outside in the middle of the day, but you're using a strobe and it looks awesome, you know. Like you can't do that.
Why did you get this, Bill? So I could do that crazy Annie Leibovitz stuff.
You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about. Anyway, so are you thinking you might want to get a little R5 or a 6D or a
something? 5D? I mean, on the other hand, I do still have my X Pro 1, which I love. I could just buy a lens for that and actually use it because I don't own an autofocus lens for it now.
What do you have for it?
I just have a little manual focus.
Why don't you buy the 3514 again?
Yeah, that's
what do those
go
for?
About five. You can get them used for maybe four and change. I think.
Let's look it up on the fly. $419 to $529. Yes.
MPB.
Yeah, I'm looking at MPB. Which apparently that's where I got the Canon. It's apparently a 20-minute walk from my house.
Oh, really?
But you can't go there.
Oh.
How frustrating is that? Because I think everything's all boxed up. It's a warehouse. What are they going to have a bunch of like photo gomers showing up being like, can I see the
photo gomers? Welcome to our new podcast.
Photo gomers.
Wow.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
I do.
You don't think that like those people.
Everybody listening knows at least one photo gomer.
They don't want those people there. You know what I'm saying? They don't need those people there.
Okay, here's my question. I'm looking at an MPB. 544 for a like new. Right? Yeah. But that's only cosmetic. The thing I don't like about MPB is they're not like a KEH where they rate it optically and they just look at the cosmetic condition of it.
Well, you know what? You get it. And if it's optically, my guess is that they're saying, yes, cosmetic. I think they don't sell anything that's not working properly. I think if the cosmetic is sort of like, they're all working properly. Here's the cosmetic difference between these.
But my question is, why would I spend $545? Oh, because it's $699. Never mind. I thought it was $599. I was like, if it's only $50 difference, why wouldn't you just buy a new one?
Yeah,
a new one is $699. Okay,
I get you.
I stand corrected.
So wait, hold on a second. Let's take this one step further.
Wait, look, here's a B&H has a used one, 8+ moderate wear. MPB is less, and they do a 6-month warranty.
I think that what was the camera that the Nikon camera you loved back in the day? 1DX? 2DX?
Oh, no. It was a D300.
No, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. Why not get one of those?
What do we got?
If you liked that so much.
$175.
That's what I'm saying.
You can get one that's good. Good cosmetic with 12,000 shutter for 164, or excellent cosmetic with 29,000 shutter for 179.
Come on, less than $200 for that camera? The only time that, and you're going to yell at me for this, the only time I remember you taking a lot of pictures was with that camera.
That's true. It's true. I loved that camera.
Okay. Well, then.
I can't really
get one for $100. Like, yeah.
Here's one for excellent condition, $149 with 11,000 actuations. That's basically a brand new camera.
Yeah. That and a 51.4 cost you $250 or $300, you know?
Yeah.
I just feel like, yes, you love your X-Pro, but you never shot with your X-Pro as much as you did with this camera. And not to be fair, but like, we're getting old. We need autofocus.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, okay, Nikon 50 mil one, not Z. Nikon AI, Nikkor 51.4. Yeah, what are we talking about? What are we talking about? Real time.
It's like the home shopping network.
Yeah, they don't have them. But anyway, I take your point. Yeah, that was a fun camera. 12 yeah. megapixel, but they were beautiful 12 megapixels.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes all you need is 12 megapixels.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I just think all that right. sometimes like going backwards to go forwards actually works.
Not and they're for, bulletproof. They're not such for me so much. Great but. Little camera. Yeah. Not for you, it would work. And I kind of love that it doesn't even have a tilty flippy screen.
Yep. Well, yeah, none of these do.
You know, it's just.
I don't know, nice. Man. Like, I think that, I don't know. Life is short, right?
It is. Actually, I have a manual focus on my F2. I've got a 51.4 on my F2.
There you go.
But I need that. And the D300, well, Cat Eye's not in business anymore, but you still could get the split prism focus screens for them, which okay. is kind of nice.
There you go.
Anyway, I mean, we've wasted too much time. People aren't interested in
all
this.
All right, here we go.
Except that they are.
I know. The people are just like, the whole first hour and 15 minutes was really boring. That 10 minutes where they're on MPB.com.
That was gold.
Anyway, if anybody has anything bad to say about an R5 and why I shouldn't get one, send us an email. I do, by the way, I think info@ontakingpictures.com. Is that what it was?
No, podcast.
Podcast at ontakingpictures.com. I think I got it working again. So try that. If it bounces.
Here, I'll send me an email. Or I'll send you an email.
It was a pain in the neck to get that working again, but I think I got it working again a little while
ago. Why was it?
Well, because when I moved it over to the new server, it wouldn't, it was something to do with like, it was telling me that because I didn't have an email address created, I couldn't create the forwards or something like that. It was something about the cPanel on the new server.
Why couldn't you just do it through Apple and their custom domains?
Well, because but I already had it pointing to, wait, how do you do that? I already had it pointing for the website.
Oh.
So, I mean, yes, I could do an MX entry, whatever. You get my point. Anyway, yeah. I think I had it figured out, but if, you know,
we'll I just see. Sent us an email, so let me know if
yeah,
you
yeah, I didn't
it.
Get it. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't get it either.
See? Maybe it's not working. I thought I could have sworn I had it working. All right. I'll double check that afterwards.
All right.
Anyway, send us an email.
We won't get it, but, you know, send it anyway.
You know where to find us on the tubes yeah. and whatever.
I have a question for you and for listeners. I'm looking for a fulfillment service to print some of my paintings. And I looked at White Wall, something like that. And they're great, but they're in the UK, which means that for me, there's VAT and tariffs and all that kind of business. So if somebody knows of like a direct print on demand for in the US for photo printing, please email us, let me know, or email me or email Bill.
What was the last time you had just sold your originals? Do you not like selling the originals?
I don't know. I haven't sold very many originals.
Yeah, but are you against selling the originals?
I'm not against originals, but the way I've photographed them, I can print a 36 by 36 version, whereas the original is only 8 by 8 inches or 12 by 12 inches.
I see.
So I can print you a bigger one than the original is. And I'm just curious if people would be interested in that. So,
okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
I have a photographer, if you don't have one.
Hit me. What do you got?
Emma Summerton. Do you know who this is?
Emma Summerton. I like the name.
She's like one of these, you know, hardcore shoots all the celebrities kind of persons. But the picture that I found that I was obsessed with is, you know, the Sandra Hüller. She played the German lady in the Hail Mary movie.
Yes.
Okay. So here, click the second link I'm sending you. And the first picture I don't like, but scroll down to the second one where like she's in profile with a hat on.
Second. Wait a minute. I only see one where she's on the red.
Okay. Wait, you scroll down. Doesn't that article go further down?
No.
Really? Okay.
No, you have to,
Here, I'm going to copy the image and I'm going to paste the image over here and I'm going to send it.
You got
to
do a trial of Vanity Fair.
Oh, okay. How the heck do I have it? I don't have
it. Oh, that's nice.
Oh, I'm using.
Is she on a bike? What is she on?
That's what I'm saying, right? Isn't that really nice? I think she's just like leaning on the edge of a thing. But look how nice the light is.
She was great in that movie.
I just, I looked at that and I was like, that is such a nice picture.
It's a beautiful picture.
And so all these pictures of her all the way down are nice. And then I went and looked at, I'm sorry, I guess I should know Emma's work and I don't. I'm adult about this kind of stuff. But like go look at her Instagram and like so many of the pictures are just really beautiful. Like,
oh yeah, this is great.
I mean, it's all straightforward, you know, beautiful people being beautiful stuff, which is
right
in no
but
way.
That's what it should be for a fashion photographer, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I just think that a lot of them are really, really beautiful and they're varied. They're not all the same. Like some of them just feel really, ethereal. And then there's a theme
of only one eye being open on a lot of her covers. If you go to the covers.
Oh, okay. Really?
Let me see. Either they're winking or there's hair covering it. There's a theme of only one eye showing, or there's a hand over it. Isn't that interesting?
Maybe that's her shtick. Everyone needs a shtick, Jeffrey. What's your shtick?
I don't know.
You should recognize that. That's an Upper West Side term. Yeah. Shtick.
Anyway, this is great. Emma Summerton.
Emma Summerton. So go take a look at Emma Summerton. She's got 108,000 followers.
I like that her
followers stuff
is not... Her toning and processing is different across the board. It's not, yep. I like that she's mixing things up.
Not all the pictures are the same. Yeah. They're really nice.
What do we know about her specifically?
I know nothing about her. I literally saw that picture and I was obsessed with it before we got on the call.
Emma is 15 years old and hails from Queensland, South Australia.
Super.
No, she was born in Wollongong, Australia.
Ah, she's Australian.
Wow. I got that one close. She attended the National Art School in Darlinghurst, studying fine art with a major in photography and printmaking. Self-portrait work began in this time though the need for privacy while, quote, working it out, end quote. A coffee shop conversation led to assisting a fashion photographer right out of art school for the next 7 years. She learned more than she imagined about photography, the magic, the technique, and the discipline of making your imagination into images.
Yep.
Okay. Yada, yada, yada.
They're very pretty. You're right. She does like covering eyes or blinking.
Yeah. See that? Isn't that wild?
Yeah. Or turning away or the hair coming down over it. Uh-huh. Wow. It's like that's her shtick.
That's her shtick. she was chosen to shoot the 49th Pirelli calendar, being only the fifth woman in its history to do so.
Yep.
Although the Pirelli calendar, is it still going? I thought they canceled that.
Maybe recently they canceled it. I mean,
go to Pirelli calendar. She's got some neat stuff there. Look at that.
It's weird. Pretty trippy stuff.
Almost like a Tim Walker vibe.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Or Chappelle, La Chappelle.
Yes, but with less... But La Chappelle, but less annoying somehow.
Yeah, less sort of... His stuff is a little garish sometimes.
I do not like his work at all.
Okay.
But that's just me.
Well, we don't have to talk about it.
I mean, listen, everyone can like... It, as my friend Bianca says, P-A-D, people are different.
People are different.
But yes, it's...
yeah, good one. This is a good one. Yeah, look at the stuff for Stern magazine.
Oh, yeah? Hold on.
Really nice.
Special Project Stern magazine. Oh yeah.
Those are
now see,
nice.
this is the kind of stuff you can do when you have really beautiful people. All right. Go look really awkward lying on that couch. Oh, you're absolutely beautiful and half naked. Then it looks awesome.
Look at that one though. Are you talking about the one where like the side panel of the dress is translucent? They're little, the red flowers and the flame shoes.
Yep.
That is a badass photograph.
But see, that's to me, I look at this and not to,
I'd like to have that sofa.
But to me, this is way more about the styling and the clothes than it is about the photograph per se. You know what I mean?
I could see that. Sure.
And that's where I hit a little bit of a wall with this kind of stuff. And I mean, listen, I guess you could say the same is true about Irving Penn stuff. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, sure.
And it's funny though, today it almost becomes a, how awkward of a position can we get somebody in? Like
that's funny.
Like here is, I'm going to send you this one. There's this woman lying on this linoleum tile floor. If anyone other than this woman was in this position, would this be a good photograph?
You know what? It looks like they caught her mid-fall.
Yes. And I think, I'm sure that's what they were going for, but it's just very odd. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. Like you're reaching for the chair that's just out of frame because those heels are so giant that you couldn't.
Here's your motivation.
Support yourself. Yeah. Go. And you can't see because these giant glasses are obscuring everything. Yeah. Go.
Yeah. You're blind and you've got, yeah,
that's right.
You've got polio.
And oh my God. No.
Like what are they doing?
Dude, you've got polio. Oh, Bill.
Too soon.
No. Too soon.
Bill. RFK Jr. too soon because it'll be happening soon. Again, my friend.
That's right.
You got anything else before we wrap?
No.
He's like, no, that's fine. We're stopping
quit while
your
we've done enough.
Moment.
Oh my God.
By the way, it is funny though, taking these 20 megapixel files, putting them in Capture One on a 5K screen and then zooming into 100% and it just goes boop. It just like zooms a little bit.
Yeah.
You're like, that's all I got.
12,
that's all my
this
pixels?
Is the thing about the D300, 12 megapixel.
Yeah. But you know what? You know, you're only getting 10, 20 megapixels out of a frame of 35 millimeter film that's any good most of the time, which is, by the way, enough to print a really nice 11 by 14.
Good point.
How often are we printing bigger than 11 by 14? Do I need 100 megapixels?
Yeah, good point. All of these are good points. I get it. Jesus.
But I have taken pictures with a 100 megapixel camera, and then, like, we were up at the farm once, and they had, Canon was there with their big printers.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was just like, I said to the guy, you know, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm just waiting for people to come back with stuff. I said, if I give you a file, you mind printing? He's like, yeah, no problem. And I gave him like one of those pictures of my friend Kelsey with the flowers all around her, you know, the redhead.
Oh, right.
And it printed out and oh my God, it looked good. You know, like at 40 inches wide by, you know, 50 inches long.
Right.
I was like, that looks absolutely beautiful. And I would put that on a wall and I'd probably sell 50 of them, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes size does matter.
There it is.
Just this once. Wow. If you've got any questions and whatevers, I'm going to try to fix the thing. But in the meantime,
oh, wait, no, it came through.
It did.
Okay,
come through.
So, it took a little bit, but yeah. See if you got it too. It's just test.
I did not get it. Let me check my spam. Oh, I did. Talk back.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I did get it. Report, okay. Not spam. So, yes, okay. It just went into
spam.
So
the email does work. Please send us email. We love
podcast
getting it.
At ontakingpictures.com.
Yeah, podcast at ontakingpictures.com. It goes to both of us. So one or both of us will reply to you.
Yep. Okay. Yep. All right. You have a good day. You feeling a little better now after our conversation?
Sure.
he's got a bottle of Prozac next to him with one pill and a glass of water.
One pill left. I'm going to ask my person. I've got my next appointment is on Thursday. So I'll ask
your doctor
about it. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see.
All right.
All right.
We will discuss. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. See ya.
Bye. The way I have for too long.
this way. Say what you want to say. I know what you will say. We'll leave.